become a part of the standard practice in my shul, where a week or two before the Super Bowl, I would give these scathing divrei mussar to tell people that they should be sitting and learning or doing important things rather than spending so much time watching the Super Bowl. So I knew in my heart of hearts, no one's listening anyway. Whoever wasn't watching the game before, still not watching the game. Whoever was watching the game, is still watching the game. So all of a sudden, I came up with this great idea. I thought it was a great idea a couple of years ago. And instead of just screaming at people and telling people not to watch the Super Bowl, why don't we innovate something a little bit new in our shul? I will give a special shiur during the Super Bowl. Now, the truth is, people weren't up to hearing a three-hour shiur, that's true. So I said, you know what? We'll give a one-hour shiur right smack in the middle of the game. Not literally in the middle of halftime, you know, around the part of the game, it doesn't really matter anyway, you know, the first half anyway. We'll give a shiur, and that way maybe two or three people will show up. So I was very pleasantly surprised because I think Rabbi Israeli could probably tell you, this is probably, I get more people for the Super Bowl shiur now than I do for Shavuos night. We're pulling about 75 people or so for the Super Bowl shiur. That there's only one condition. The condition is that I have to give a shiur something that's relevant to football, something that's relevant to Super Bowl. So this has been hard over the years. I struggle every year, a week or two before, to try to come up with something creative, something innovative. We already spoke about the issues of Chukos Akum. We already spoke about the issues of Mazik. And a lot of things to talk about. But I'll share with you what I spoke about in the very first year. The opening year, the inaugural shiur of the Super Bowl shiur in Torah in Bergenfield, New Jersey, was about gambling, was about betting. Are you allowed to bet on the game? Not allowed to bet on the game? What are the parameters of gambling in general? So I think we're going to break down the shiur really into two parts. We're going to talk about from the lamdusha halachic vantage point. It's a real sugya. Those who learned Maseches Sanhedrin may have touched on the sugya a little bit in the third parak of Sanhedrin. Gambling and betting is a very real halachic sugya with some real lamdus and some real issues that come up in terms of pure psak halacha. And then there's the second half. The second half is what as Shomrei Torah mitzvahs, as budding B'nai Torah, what our approach should be tachlis practically in terms of the whole notion, the whole institution of gambling. So I'm going to go in the order of first talking about the lamdus and the halacha, because if I share with you first what I think lamaisa about whether a person should be gambling, I was going to say, okay, the rabbi just said it's all lost anyway, so why bother listening to the lamdus? So let's get ourselves into the lamdus a little bit. We'll try to learn the sugya through as if we're learning a sugya, lamdus and lamaisa, and then we'll try to come to someone, I think, of the more correct conclusions, how this should play out in terms of our daily lives. So let's begin the sugya, where the sugya actually starts. It starts with the third parak of Maseches Sanhedrin. The Mishnah of Maseches Sanhedrin is talking about individuals who are not acceptable to be edim in Beis Din. In order to be an aid, in order to be a witness in any court case, or for that matter, to be an aid at a kiddushin, something like that, as you get a little bit older, so as your friends start to get married, you're going to be called in possibly to become edim, aid at kiddushin. So you want to make sure that you're actually kosher to do that. So in order to be an aid kiddushin, or to be an aid in any case in halacha, there are certain basic minimum criteria that have to be met. A person cannot be related. First of all, a person has to be Jewish, can't be related, has to be over by mitzvah. And the person halachically cannot be a rasha. If the person is halachically labeled as a rasha, then they are not acceptable to be an aid in any area of halacha. And the question is, what exactly constitutes being a rasha? So the halacha tells us that one can qualify for this wonderful title, being a rasha, in multiple ways. If a person violates Isura Nisa's Beis Din, a person does something that would qualify the days of the Beis HaMikdash, it would be Chai Misas Beis Din. For example, a person's a Ritzeach. If you kill somebody, so you're possible to be an aid. If you're a Mechal Shabbos, you're possible to be an aid. You violate Isurei Misa, you're possible to be an aid. In addition, the halach is, even if a person violates something which is a little bit less severe than that, he violates something that would carry with it an onish of Malkus in Beis Din. 39 lashes in Beis Din. He eats non-kosher food. He does melacha and yomtif. He wears shatnez, etc. That would also disqualify him to be an aid. Those are considered to be rishoyim. And then there's a third category of rosh, which actually the Torah speaks about explicitly, and that's what's called the rosh dechamos, somebody who is dishonest, somebody who steals, somebody who's involved in dishonest business practices. So such an individual is also disqualified to be an aid. So if you know that a person is a ganav, you know the person is involved in some kind of shady business practices, don't ask him to be mechubah, to be your aid tradition. You can read the ksuv he wants, but it shouldn't be the aid. Not a good idea to do that either. You don't want to give too much cover to people who are ganavim. But in terms of pure halacha, you shouldn't have him be an aid. He would not be acceptable. So you have the rishayim of Mises Beis Din, the rishayim of Malkus, and the rishayim of Geneva kinds of things. In the context of this third type of a person who is possibly eidos, this is where the Mishnah begins, and the Mishnah begins to list off different individuals who are involved in questionable, I can't actually use the term business practices, but who are involved in questionable monetary pursuits, and they sometimes get money in ways that perhaps they shouldn't be doing, And these individuals are all disqualified to be Edim. So on the list of these people are some types of gambling that sounds somewhat familiar to us. The Mishnah speaks about Mesachik Bekuvia. Kuvia means dice, people who play dice. Or Mafricha Yonim, people who bet on pigeon races. Now again, probably today, that's not the number one thing in 2019, pigeon races. But obviously the principle has nothing to do with pigeons, nothing to do with races. It doesn't make much of a difference whether you're betting my pigeon against your pigeon, or my quarterback against your quarterback, or anything in shape or form of the same. So it doesn't really matter whether you're playing dice or whether you're playing cards. It doesn't matter whether you're betting on animals, you're betting on people. These are all considered to be types of activities that the Mishnah lumps together as the Mesachim Bekuvia, Mefricha Yoinim. And the Mishnah says all of the above are disqualified to be Edim. And the question is why? What are they doing that's wrong? So the Gemara presents as the first interpretation, what they're doing, what's wrong is that they're considered to be Gazlonim. They are thieves. Why are they thieves? Because there is a halachic principle called asmachta. Asmachta means that I enter into an agreement with you that if such and such happens, I'm going to pay you money, but I don't really think such and such is going to happen. I never really was convinced that I'm going to lose this money. And then lo and behold, my luck runs out, and I end up having to give you the money. I don't really want to give you the money. I'm going to give it to you because I don't want you to kill me. I don't want you to come and get me. I don't want you to come and, beat me up. But at the end of the day, I don't really want to give you the money because I never entered into this deal thinking I'm going to have to give you the money. So that's what the Gemara describes as asmachta. The Gemara uses the phrase asmachta lo kanya. That asmachta is not a valid kinya. Asmachta is not a way of transferring ownership on money. If somebody gives you a gift outright, that's fine, then it's yours. But if somebody got finagled, they got caught into a type of an agreement that they thought they were going to win, and in the end they lose, so they never really want to give you the money, and therefore if you take the money, you are considered to be a gazlan. So that's the first approach to the Gemara. Yes. Wait, hold on. Okay. Yeah, a lot of things to talk about. Okay, a lot of things to talk about. All right? So this is the first approach of the Gemara. Asmachta lo kanya. And therefore, the reason why these fellows in the Mishnah are disqualified to be Edim is because they're apostle, because they're gazlonim. That's the simple pshat in the Gemara. Tosus already on the spot raises a problem that if that's true, that these people are regular ganavim, regular gazlonim, there's a little bit of a problem, because if you look in the Mishnah actually doesn't mention Ganavim and Gazlanim. The Gemara talks about regular Ganavim and Gazlanim, but the Mishnah doesn't even talk about them. The Mishnah doesn't talk about the guy who goes into a bank and says, give me your money. The Mishnah doesn't talk about somebody who mugs somebody, who pickpocket somebody, someone who's actually an outright Ganav. The Mishnah talks about a roundabout kind of a situation of a Mesachik Bekuvia, a guy who plays dice, who wins the game, wins the poker game, and then gets the money from the other fellow. The Mishnah talks about the fellow who's betting on the Super Bowl, and then he gets the money out of the other fellow. Why doesn't the Mishnah talk about the real McCoy, about the real Ganavim? So Tosa suggests that the reason why the Mishnah doesn't talk about the real Ganavim is because those people are actually puzzled into Araisa. They're puzzled according to the Torah itself. These guys who are playing cards, the guys who are betting, the guys who are playing poker, they're not posel midda araisa. Why are they not posel midda araisa? If they're gazlonim, if you really believe that they are thieves, that they're robbers, that they're dishonest, they're crooks, if you really believe asmachta lokanya, that the other fellow doesn't want to give the money and that's tantamount to robbing a bank, so then why aren't they posel midda Torah? So Tosa suggests because most people don't realize this. Most, if you ask an average person, probably many of you before you came to the shiur didn't realize this. Many people don't realize that playing cards is a shail of Geneva. Many people don't realize that betting on a football game is a shail of Geneva. People don't know this. And therefore, for the most part, people are probably shogeg. And we have a rule that if a person does an aveir for shogeg, so strictly speaking, min haTorah, he does not become posel. Let's say a guy doesn't know you're not allowed to eat treif. So he made a mistake. He didn't know. I thought that McDonald's in Eretz Yisrael was kosher. I didn't realize that it was kosher. So it turns out that particular McDonald's is not kosher. I didn't say it is, but it's not. I'm not saying anything. But a person made a mistake. He thought that this restaurant was kosher. Then it wasn't. So he's not posel l'edus min haTorah. So Tosa suggests that the one who's gambling is not really posel l'edus. Not because what he's doing is not Geneva, but because people don't realize that it's not Geneva. And therefore, there was a special chumra midirabanan, a special institution midirabanan, that even though he's really a gazlan, min haTorah, according to the standards of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he's the same as the guy who robs a bank. But since most people don't know that, therefore min haTorah, he would still be kosher. And midirabanan, we say that he's possible. That's Tosa's theory in the sugya. Yeah.
What if he doesn't know?
If he does know, that would be a much more serious problem, right? That would be a very serious problem. So there are others who take a little bit of a different approach to Tosfos. Mordechai in Maseches Baba Kama, when the Gedolei Rishonim quotes, a different, an alternative answer to Tosa's question, that maybe the reason why the Masechet Bekuvia is only possible in the Rabbanon is because maybe min haTorah this is not really theft. Maybe min haTorah asmachta is kanya. Maybe min haTorah if I bet on something, the other guy agrees, so I can take the money. But the Rabbanon, it's a Rabbanon of Gezeilah. It's a Rabbanon of Gedeilah. The same way we find it in Chashabes. There are many things that, technically speaking, according to the Torah itself, are allowed to be done. But with the Rabbanon, you're not allowed to do. So too, it could be that this kind of Geneva type of activity, maybe is not real Geneva on a level of the Arayis. It's only Geneva on a level of the Rabbanon. And therefore, the Mishnah felt necessity to speak about it. And that's why the Mishnah left out the guy who robs the bank. The guy who robs the bank, of course, is possible. What's the Shiloh? What's the question? So let's just summarize for a moment what we have at this point. We have a Mishnah. The Mishnah says explicitly that a person who plays cards and a person who plays dice, a person bets on the pigeon races and whatever, you name it, is possible to aid us. That's not negotiable. That's a Mishnah. Farish a Mishnah. We're not sure why that's so. So the Gemara explains the reason is because of that magic term, asmachta lo kanya. Because these kinds of deals are not binding in halacha. And therefore, when I take the other person's money, I'm tantamount to being a ganav. So we're bothered with the question, if I'm really a ganav, so how come the Mishnah doesn't talk about real ganav? How come the Mishnah only talks about these watered-down ganavim? So Tosfos gave one answer. The reason why the Mishnah only mentioned these guys is because people didn't know about this. So most people are showing him in this area. So therefore, he's only possible in the Rabbanan. And the Mordechai said, no. The reason why the Mishnah doesn't say it is because the whole Isser was only Midir Rabbanan in the first place. This Mordechai becomes very, very important in halacha. If this Mordechai would be correct, that the issue of asmachta lokanya is only a problem in the Rabban, it's not real bona fide gazela. So this may be a source for a certain leniency that the Mordechai himself quotes, that we know Chazal tell us that sometimes for the purposes of tzedakah, so if something is really asur, it's a real isadir isa, so tzedakah is not allowed to steal money either, you're not allowed to steal money for yeshiva either. So something that's really, really bona fide is asur, you're not allowed to do even the makam of tzedakah. But certain things that perhaps are not real isurim, that are only us amid the Rabbanan, they're not isurim d'araisa. So situations of tzedakah, very often we're a little bit more lenient. This is actually based on the Gemara in the fifth parak above Metziah, where the Gemara talks about the issue of ribbis. We know there's a prohibition of taking interest from one Jew to the next. That's a Torah prohibition. Even if both parties agree to it, that's absolutely prohibited amid the araisa. If a person has to be involved in some kind of a business deal that involves taking of something that resembles interest, so they must consult with the Rav and figure out there are ways to do it in a way that's permissible, but to outright take interest is an Issa Goma Min HaTorah. So if those who learned the fifth parak of Maseches Bava Metziah, so may remember, you may have learned the Mishnah, I said sometimes it's a very, very hard parak. But basically there are some cases that are ribbis min haTorah, that are outright interests that are clearly prohibited min haTorah. Then you have a lot of other funny kinds of cases that for some reason are not ribbis min haTorah, but they look like ribbis, they resemble ribbis, they smack of ribbis, and therefore they're prohibited mid the Rabbanim. So the Gemara says in the fifth parak of Bava Metziah that when you have something that's also for ribbis, D-R-I-S-A, it doesn't matter, even for tzedakah, even for yeshivas, even for shuls, are not allowed to be involved. But something that's only prohibited mid the Rabbanon of ribbis, if it's not a real Torah prohibition, it's only mid the Rabbanon, so then they lifted that prohibition mid the Rabbanon in order to make it easier for the tzedakah money, in order to be able for the shuls to function, for the yeshivas to function, etc. I just got a call from my shul just the other day about the shayla, about there's an issue, again, we're not learning the sukkah of ribbis right now, but there are issues in terms of ribbis if you have a two-tier pricing system for something. If I say to you that if you pay for something now, I'll give it to you at price X, and if you pay for it later, so then the price goes up, so that may be a potential problem of ribbis, even though it's not an actual loan. Anytime you have any money that's being put on hold and prices are going up for that, that runs into very, very serious shadows of ribbis. Those kinds of ribbis, those funny kinds of ribbises, so those are usually only prohibited mid the Rabbanan. So the shadows presented, can a shul enter into one of these kinds of things? Can a shul offer certain services, sell certain things in a two-tier pricing? So normally as a regular person is not permitted to do that, but a shul may be permitted to do that because that would only be ribbis mid the Rabbanan. So that idea that the Mordechai develops for us, that if gambling is only prohibited mid the Rabbanan, so then maybe there would be grounds to permit that on behalf of Mekomos of Tzedakah, shuls, yeshivas, etc. This was the famous kula that existed for many, many years. It's not the most common type of gambling today, but when I was a little kid, this was still very, very common. Playing bingo. I don't even know what bingo is, but playing the old playing bingo. So people would get together with these cards, you put in a couple of dollars, and if you, every once in a while you'd win the jackpot, you get a couple of dollars. So they used to have bingo nights. Many shuls used to have bingo nights. I'm not advocating going back to those bingo nights, but in the old days when they used to have bingo nights, so they used to raise money for the shul. So people raised questions, bingo, gambling, gavalt. So the answer that was usually given was that, according to this Mordechai, it's only a prohibitive mitzvah rabbanan to raise the money for the shul. That would be permissible. But again, that's a whole nother question about the practical ramifications of that. Yeah, so, okay, well, we'll talk a little bit about some of those other kinds of things that are highly, highly questionable for many reasons. Okay, so, again, so we have a basic tzur of the sugya, at least the beginning of the sugya, where the Gemara is telling us that the reason why these fellows are puzzled to Eidos is because they're gazlanim, either they're gazlanim deraisa, gazlanim derabon. And then the Gemara makes an about-face, or at least according to some Rishonim, the Gemara makes an about-face, and the Gemara says, wait a second, who said that gambling, that betting on the horses, betting on the pigeons, playing dice, is really an issue of asmachta in the first place? Again, the halachic term asmachta means, I enter into a deal with you, and I think that I'm not going to have to pay you the money the way I suspect that I'm not going to have to pay you, and then things don't work out the way I planned. That's what's called asmachta. Comes the Gemara and says, wait a second, not so simple. Maybe betting and gambling and playing all these kinds of games is not a smachta altogether. Maybe this is not even relevant to the issue of a smachta. Why is this not a smachta? So that's a little bit unclear in the Gemara. The Gemara just uses the phrase, Amr of Sheishas, Kol Ki Agav Lava Smachta. That betting on the pigeons and playing with dice is not considered to be an smachta. The question is, why not? Why is this any different from regular smachta? So we have to go back to some of the classic asmachta examples that do appear in the Gemara, why betting should or should not be the same. So the Gemara talks about different kinds of situations where I enter an agreement with you and I say that if such and such happens, so I'll pay you X amount of money, and I don't really think such and such is going to happen. I don't believe it's going to happen. I think that never in a million years is going to happen. But I obligated myself to, if such and such happens, I'll pay you X amount of money. So the Gemara calls that an asmachta. The Gemara says, we hold asmachta lokanya, that would not be acceptable. So why is gambling not asmachta? It's the same thing. I don't think I'm going to lose. So here comes Rashi and says, there's a big, big difference between the gambling, the betting on the pigeons, and the betting on the football games, and the playing of the cards, and the playing of the dice. There's a huge difference between that and a person who just opens up the mouth and says, well, I'm going to give you $100 if such and such happens. So comes Rashi and says that in the classic asmachta, where I say, I'm going to give you X amount of money, it's totally B. It depends on me. That means I'm in control of the situation. So I personally don't believe I'm going to ever have to pay you that money. Says Rashi, when you play cards, you play dice, you're betting on the pigeons, it's totally not biyadcha. It's not in your control anymore. It's not in your hands anymore. So what do you mean you think you're going to win? Everybody knows that you don't always win. Anybody, person bets, their odds, their gambling, whatever. Everybody realizes you don't always win. And not only do you not always win, but it's not in biyadcha to win. So even though you think you're going to win, you think you analyze the game properly, you analyze the horses properly, you analyze, you know, you practice at the casino a little bit, you think you're going to win. Who are you kidding? You know that there's a very good chance that you may lose, and it's not biyadcha. You're not in control anymore, and you still agreed to enter into this obligation. So that's considered to be what we call in halacha gemiras das. It's considered to be that you committed yourself to the money, and if in fact you lose, then you actually owe me the money, and I'm not considered to be a ganav. So that's Rashi's interpretation why betting may be almost in a certain sense better than classic asmachta.
Why are we machalik that when it's betting, it's two people, so he also has a chance of winning?
Oh, very good. You're coming to Rabbeinu Tam. That's Rabbeinu Tam's plan. Okay? So again, so we're trying to find out why, according to one opinion of the Gemara, according to Rav Sheshes, why is betting not called a smachta? According to the first opinion that was run by Chum and Sanhedrin, that betting is a smachta, and that's why it's also and finished. And Rav Sheshes says, no, it's not a smachta. It's different. Why is it different? So Rashi says, because it's not biyadcha. So Rav Tosfos quotes the name of Rabbeinu Tam a different reason. That the reason why it's not considered to be a problem of a smachta is because I have something to win as well as to lose. That means I want to obligate myself to give the money if I lose, because quite frankly, I want you to obligate to give the money if you lose. So it's worth it for me to enter into this agreement. In a situation where I have only stand to lose and nothing to gain, so then in my heart of hearts, I don't think I'm going to have to pay you the money. And if it turns out that I do, then you're a ganav for taking it from me, because I never was gomadaiti. I never really, really committed to do it 100%. But in a situation of betting and gambling where I know that I sometimes win, I know sometimes lose, it's worth it for me to lose every once in a while so that once in a while I win. So therefore, there is considered to be gemur zah. So now again, we have almost four different possibilities here. We have the first opinion of the Gemara that betting is outright asmachta. We're not sure whether he's a gazlim in a Torah or only a gazlim in the Rabbanan. Then we have the second opinion of the Gemara that says, no, betting is not considered to be gazel altogether. It's not considered to be asmachta lokanya. For one of two reasons, it's different. Either because it's not biyado, or because the person stands what to gain. I'm sorry.
So flipping a coin
is something that's not biyadchas. You have no idea. There's no way of knowing which way it's going to. But the guy. Wait, hold on. So that's exactly what we're trying to figure out. Okay, that's exactly what we're trying to figure out. Okay, so again, so let's backtrack for a second. So we have the first opinion in the Gemara that the reason why these fellows apostle is because they're gazlanim, meaning they're ice and they're abundant. According to the second approach of the Gemara, they're not really gazlanim because this is not really asmachta for either Rashi's reason or Rabbeinu Tam's reason. So now we have a huge problem in the sugya. What's the huge problem in the sugya? Well, what does the Mishnah say? The Mishnah says that they are posuliyedus. So why are they posuliyedus? According to the second opinion in the Gemara, that they're not really asmachta for either Rashi's reason or Rabbeinu Tam's reason. So push comes to shove. Why the posuliyedus? You can't argue with the Mishnah. So the Gemara gives a whole new reason to the Mishnah. Comes the Gemara and says, the reason why these fellows are posul is not because they're doing anything per se that's asur. They're posul for a different reason of einam oskim b'yeshuva shel olam. That they're not doing anything which is productive. They're not learning. They're not working. They're not contributing to society. They don't have any sense of what it means to go to work and to make a couple of dollars and do things honestly. The whole value system of money is very warped. They think that this is how you make a parnasa. You go to the racetrack, you bet a couple of dollars, and hope and pray that you're going to win. You go around, you sit in the corner, and you play a poker, you play cards, you play dice, whatever you're playing. You're betting on your pigeons, and that's the whole mindset of how you make and lose money. So comes the Gemara and says, that's called Einam Oskim B'Yeshuva Shel Olam. A person who's Einam Oskim B'Yeshuva Shel Olam cannot be an aid. For a very simple reason, that we have to question their honesty. We have to question their value system. When you have a person who understands, you get up in the morning, you go to work, and I know that I work for X amount of hours, and I get a few dollars, so the money means something to me. If I get money in these very strange ways, I make money when my team wins, I lose money when my team loses, so I have no idea, no understanding whatsoever of what it means to honestly work for money. So that's called Eina Oskim B'Shuv Shalolam, and we cannot trust such a person to be a kosher aid. We're afraid that he may not tell the truth when it comes to monetary kinds of things. So the Gemara says, well, what's the difference whether you go down the first route that the guy's a gazlan, or whether you go down the second route that he's not a gazlan? The Gemara says there's a big difference. What if he has a regular job? He has a regular parnasa, but on the side, he also gambles. So what would you say about such a person? So if you say that he's a gazlan, either a gazlan d'oraisa or a gazlan d'rabbanan, it doesn't matter how often he steals. Let's say you have a fellow who has a really good job. He's a very, very, you know, generally honest person. But every once in a while, he robs a bank. So you would say he's kosher? No. He's a pretty, pretty nice guy. Every once in a while, he kills somebody. Oh, God, he's not a nice guy. You can't trust such a guy in days. And the guy's a liar. So if a person, if you really believe, like the first approach of the Gemara, that it's considered to be gezeila, either min haTorah, min haRabbanan, so even if it's done once or twice on the side, you know, after hours, that would still pose a very, very serious problem. But if you go down the second route, that he's not really posel, he shouldn't really be posel, he's not really a gazla, not min haTorah, not min haRabbanan. It's just that in Osik B'Yeshuva Shel Olam, well, he is Osik B'Yeshuva Shel Olam. He has a good job. He has a good parnasa. He's a doctor. He makes a lot of money. But on the side, on Sundays, he likes to bet on the football game. So he does it once in a while. Such a person wouldn't necessarily become posul yedus. So we just basically set outside the entire sugya Maseches Sanhedrin, the Mishnah, the two opinions of the Gemara, Machlokes Rishonim, whether Deraisa Derabanan, the second Machlokes Rishonim, why Asmacht is not the same as betting, and Nafkamin Ladina, if you have such a person who has another job. How do we paskin l'halocha on the Shaila? What's the final word on the Shaila? So this is a Machlokes Rishonim. So there are Rishonim who paskin, Tosfos paskins, like the second day in the Gemara. That seems to be the conclusion. Generally speaking, when the Gemara says something, it quotes one opinion, then the second opinion seems to get the last word in. So we seem to paskin like the second opinion. And therefore, says Tosfos, we would paskin l'halocha that the person is not really a gazlan, that betting is not quite on par with actual stealing. There's a big difference between winning a bet on a football game and robbing a bank. It's just not the same. Again, for Rashi's reason or Rabbeinu Tam's reason, it's just not the same. What would that mean, lahalacha? That means if a person has a good job and every once in a while he just bets, we could not declare that he's posel le'edus. We would have to say that such a person would be kosher le'edus. That's how Tosa says the simple reading of the Gemara is. But then Tosa continues and says, well, wait a second, hold the phone for a second, says Tosa. Says, we're discussing what kind of betting a Chazal talking about. And this becomes critical to halacha, says Tosfos. What kind of betting are we talking about? We're talking about what's called in halacha, mos munachim al hadaf. That means all the money was put down already. Again, I don't know, Baruch Hashem, I don't know enough about the modern day betting to be able to talk about the halacha equivalent of this. Hopefully no one will know enough to fill me in on it. But says Tosfos that if you put the money down and you basically gave the money over and you put it down into a common area, so then we could discuss, did you have das? Did you not have das? So according to the first opinion of the Gemara, you didn't really have das. According to the second opinion of the Gemara, you probably did have das. So then you can argue maybe it's not a gazlan. But if the money wasn't put down yet into an area, a common area, so then, wait a second, I didn't even put the money down in the first place, and now I lost the bet, and now you come to me the next day and say, give me the money, and you've got to pull the money out of my pocket and give it to you. Says Tosfos, for sure you're a gazlan. There's no question you're a gazlan. The guy doesn't want to give you the money. The guy wasn't machne the money to you. So that's not even the Gemara. The Gemara's not even talking about that, says Tosfos. The whole sugya of the Gemara was only talking about when the maos were munachim al hadaf. Comes the Rambam and says that, guess what? We don't even follow that second opinion in the Gemara. According to the Rambam, I'm not even sure what the second opinion in the Gemara said, but we thought he said. The Rambam says the halacha is, we follow like the first opinion in the Gemara, that betting is outright gezeila. It's the same as stealing. Again, going back to what we said before, the Raisa, the Rabbana, but it's the same as stealing. And therefore, according to the Rambam, the whole distinction that we had, well, it's not really stealing, the guy really wants to win, or the guy is not in control, all those chilukim, all those distinctions are purely academic, and they're completely irrelevant la halacha. And therefore the Rambam paskins that if you actually bet, and you win the bet, so then inochinami, you are a gazlan, you are considered to be a full-fledged gazlan. So nevertheless, the Rambam still says that a person who plays these kinds of games doesn't become posel yedus, if he has another job. What does that mean? So the Mefarshim explaining the Rambam, what that means is, the Rambam's talking about when you're betting, when you're playing games for fun, you're not really betting, it's not a real betting, you're playing pigeon races, you're playing cards, you're not playing for keeps. So that's what the Rambam says, if you're not really playing the game for money, so then it's not a great idea. If you have another job, not the end of the world. But if you're playing for keeps, you're playing to keep the other, take the other guy's money, so the Rambam says you do it one time, you're a gazlan. If you're a gazlan, of course you're possibly ages. So we have a major machlokes that we've shown him here about what our take is in all these kinds of cases of gambling. So again, chazer, according to Tosfos, it's a machlokes in the Gemara, and the final word in the Gemara is that gambling is not really a smachta, kol ki agavna lav asmachta, and therefore it's not really gezela. The only thing is, Tosfos puts the brakes on it. Tosfos says that b'med v'amurim, when is that true? That's if the money was put forward. If the money wasn't put forward, so then there's nothing to talk about. Then you're an outright gazlan. According to the Rambam, it doesn't make the slightest bit of difference whether you put the money forward, didn't put the money forward. According to the Rambam, all gambling, all betting, any of this kind of stuff is outright gazela. That according to the Rambam, the only kind of a case that you can negotiate that the guy isn't possibly hate us is only when he's doing it for fun. Doing it for fun, whether it's a good idea, a bad idea, but you can't say he's a gazlan for that. But any kind of betting whatsoever, asmachta lokanya, is considered to be an outright gazela. Who says you're allowed to play these games on Shabbos? Maybe you're not allowed.
So maybe you're not allowed to play them. You're not
allowed to play. Well, 6 days a week, according to the Rambam. Forget about Shabbos, you wouldn't be allowed to play. Yeah.
Can you put it on the table, the money on the table, and claim it after, right? And then whoever wins this game gets to claim the money.
Well, that's what Tosfos would say. Tosfos would say that if the most of Munachim al Hadaf, so then Tosfos would hold, that would probably be okay. But I said, according to that understanding of the Gemara, it would probably be okay. I didn't say we passed like that understanding of the Gemara. Yeah.
Do you think that Tosfos would apply like raffles, where you put the money beforehand for buying tickets?
Okay, so one could argue when you have these kinds of things which are more like raffles and lotteries and that kind of stuff, there it's not a question if I'm taking from one person versus another. This item is going to be sold. It means the lottery, someone's going to win this lottery. So the question is, when that money is being put forward, so everybody understands that I'm putting the money into this general pot, and now let's say the city of New York, whoever is running this lottery, so now that money, they're going to give the money to somebody. It's not that the government's going to keep the money forever. They know that they can give off the money to somebody. So I just happen to be the one who got the lucky numbers. So that may be one grounds law, a little bit different. There's another grounds law, depending on what kind of raffles and what kind of lotteries we're talking about. Remember we mentioned before that if it's being done for in Yonim of Tzedakah, that would be okay. So a lot of the kinds of raffles, even some of the lotteries in the non-Jewish world are being done for charity kinds of purposes. That would be a whole other potential leniency. Well, if it's just for fun, then it shouldn't be any money.
I mean, just make
the adrenaline flow a little more. But you're not really a... Okay, yeah, I mean, again, that would be significantly better than playing for keeps. But I can think of better things to do with my time.
Even if we assume that you're not tussled for Eidos, if you gamble, does that still mean that it's mutter?
Right, no, not necessarily. That's what the Rambam is saying. Right. That's exactly the question. Are these two things necessarily go hand in hand? So let's say Min HaTorah, for sure they don't. Min HaTorah, Tosas claims it's also to gamble, but you don't become Pasul Eidos necessarily. So the two are not necessarily totally zippers. Okay?
What if it's not with money?
Those other kinds of things which have value, that's like money. That's also like money.
So what if, like, question, would that be, what about, like, let's say, markets?
So when anything that's for keeps, it would automatically be part of this discussion. Okay? So up until now, we have a little bit of a background. Let me just finish a little bit, then we'll take a couple questions at the end. So we have a little bit of a background just in terms of the lumdus and the different possibilities. Now let's try to talk a little bit lamaisa. Okay, so we see there's a very, very potentially serious shaila here. According to some Rishon, there's a shaila deraisa here. According to others, a shaila derabanan. According to some, maybe it's less of a shaila. So there is a lot of wiggle room just in terms of lumdus here, in terms of the sugya itself. But it would appear, I think this is clear as day, whether you agreed with all the lumdus that I said before. So what I'm about to say now, I think, is in a certain sense the most important part of this entire sugya. That there is a very, very serious problem, a significantly serious problem, with any shape or form of gambling and betting based on the following. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein was asked a shaila. And I don't want to take away from some of the other shurim that may be going on tonight. I know some of you may be going too, but Rabbi Shafiz was asked to Shaila as to where does it say, so to speak, in the Chumash? What's the source in the Torah that's prohibited to take drugs? That was the Shaila that Rabbi was asked. So Rabbi said, it goes without a question, it's something which is so a flagrant violation of so many different things on so many levels in the Torah. But Rabbi, you know, was such a lamdan, such a poisek, that he pinned it on to a specific pasuk in Chumash. Ramosha said, there's a pasuk in Chumash that tells us, lo sochu al hadam, that when you have to be careful not to eat on blood, lo sochu al hadam, when the world does that mean lo sochu al hadam? So Chazal tells us, the Torah Rapeh explains to us, that has multiple interpretations. But one of them, which is the most important for our sugya, not just for our sugya tonight, but really for this entire evening, is what the Gemara tells us in Masechta Sanhedrin, there's a tragedy of tragedies called a ben sora umora. A ben sora umora is somebody who Nebuch, he's a very young boy, just turned bar mitzvah, first couple of months after his bar mitzvah, and he gets into some very, very bad habits. He starts to eat a lot of meat, he starts to drink a lot of wine, and lo and behold, he doesn't have the means to support this lifestyle, and what does he do? Unfortunately, he starts to steal, and he gets caught. He ate a lot of meat, drank a lot, got himself good and drunk, starts to steal from his father, and he got caught. So he gets punished in Beis Din, doesn't get killed. Gets Malchus in Beis Din. He's warned that you're going down the wrong path. And then it happens again. And a tragedy of tragedies, the Torah tells us, he's actually Chayav Misa. He's actually killed at that point. Now, that's the bad news. The good news is, the Gemara tells us in Masechta Sanhedrin, L'hoyev lo yia. It never really happened. That the parsha of Ben Sora Mora never really, really happened. It's almost impossible, halachically, for it to actually happen. There are so many loopholes in the system in halacha that make it almost impossible. So why was it given to us? Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu bother to give it to us? So the Gemara says, Drosh v'kabel schar, that we're supposed to learn the lessons and be rewarded. What does that mean? So many of the Bali Musa explain, we're supposed to learn why this happened. What does the Torah tell you? Why does the Torah spend 6, 8, 10 psukim about something that's not relevant, about something that never happened, never will happen? Because it's there to teach us a profound lesson. What is the lesson? So the Gemara tells us in Masechta Sanhedrin, where does it say in the Chumash that you're not allowed to be a ben sora mora? We have a rule, you can't kill somebody unless he's warned. Where does it say? It says Chazal, lo sochlu al hadam. don't eat in a way that causes your own death. Lo sochu al hadam. That's the prohibition of being a Bitzar Amora. Says Rav Moshe, it's true that we don't have a Sanhedrin today, we don't have a Beis Din anymore, we don't have Bitzar Amoras, we never had Bitzar Amoras. But what is the meaning, Derosh for Kabbalah, what is the message, what is the lesson for all generations the Torah is trying to tell us? Lo sochu al hadam. Don't get involved in activity that will cause your own death. But what is the nature of the activity that the Bitzar Amora is involved in? And the answer is obvious. What he is involved in is addictive behavior. That's exactly what he gets himself into. He's a young boy, he's 13 years old, and unfortunately he went down the wrong path. And he gets himself mixed up with alcohol, with wine, and we know that that is an addiction. A person becomes addicted to something, they lose control of themselves. When they lose control of themselves, then anything and everything goes. And he begins to steal from his parents. And Chazal is saying, what's going to happen next? If he doesn't get enough money from his parents, what's going to happen? He's going to start to steal from other people. And when he starts to steal from other people, what's going to happen? Someone's going to fight back. And what's going to happen? Someone's going to get hurt. And what's going to happen next? Someone is going to get killed. And this is all started. It's a very, very direct, very simple trajectory. And you don't need a PhD in anything to figure this out, that a person who starts out on addictive behavior is ending up going down the wrong path. He will destroy himself and everybody else and the entire world around him. Says Rav Moshe, that is the essence of a Ben Sarah Meira. Rav Moshe said, that is the reason why, for one of many, many, many reasons, why you cannot take a drug. Well, you can't go on drugs. Says Rav Moshe, it's addictive behavior, and you don't need Rav Moshe Feinstein to tell it to us. Anybody with a half intelligence realizes that anybody who gets themselves involved in any shape or form of any kind of addiction, whether that addiction is literally illegal drugs, whether that addiction is drinking, whether that addiction is other kinds of activities, any type of a behavior that you are no longer in control of and you have this desire and you can't get out of it, is all included under the heading of Lo Socho Al Hadam. Those who know a little bit about gambling and the impact that gambling has on a person's life and a person's surroundings knows that gambling is officially up there on the list of addictions. It's up there with drugs, it's up there with alcohol, it's up there with smoking. That gambling is an addictive behavior. It starts very, very, very naively. So it's very, very simple. Yeah, we'll bet a little bit on this, we'll play a little bit, whatever other kinds of things, we'll play a little fancy football, we'll bet a little bit on the horses, we'll play whatever kinds of betting, pigeon races, playing cards, you name it, Baruch Hashem, I don't know too much about it. Any and every kind of gambling becomes addictive. The same way that a little bit of drinking becomes addictive, and smoking is addictive, and drugs are addictive, gambling is addictive. And how does it play out down the line? So sometimes, the same way that Ben Sora Mora looks at it and says, come on, this is not going to ruin my life. He's very, very naive. He's all 13. You guys are also not that much older than 13. And you live a little bit longer, and you see, and you hear, and you read about, and you see lives that have been destroyed, marriages that have been destroyed, children that have been destroyed in the process. Person becomes addicted to gambling, so that everything breaks down. His entire family life breaks down. His entire everything, not to mention Avodas Hashem, breaks down. Because everything revolves around getting that next money and getting the next money, and he doesn't have enough money. He's got to borrow the money, then he can't pay back his loans, and he's got to do dishonest. Everything, one leads to the next, and leads to the next, and the next, and the next, and he can't break out, and he really has to go for help. He's got to go to professional help in order to get out of it. It all started Lo Socho Al Hadam. So, Rabbi Yisai, I say this with the utmost seriousness. You can learn the sugya in two different ways, the sugya of gambling. You can learn the sugya like we learned for the first half hour, learning the sugya in the Lomsk Valdi. When you learn the third practice at head, you got to go through every single svara, and she does that taitzis, and the Mordechai, what's the machlekes, and the Rambam, and the Rav Sheshis, or whatever. Gavaldik, Meredik. Go through all the Lomdus and the Shulchan Aruch, and you can come up with conclusion, such and such, whatever the case may be. Was the money on the daf? Was the money not on the daf? Was it a smachta? Was it, what is the rice? It's Gavaldik, it's Meredik. It's a great sugya. And then there's the lamaisa part of the sugya. The lamaisa part of the sugya is that forget about being a ben Torah. Forget about Yiddishkeit for a second. Don't quote me on that. Forget about Torah for a second. Don't quote me on that. Just in terms of being a human being, said a human being, if you want to have a healthy, stable, emotionally stable, psychologically stable, stable marriage, with stable children, with stable job, with just stability in life. So the one of the worst things you could possibly do is to get yourself into gambling habits. So it may seem very, very innocent right now. Come on, Rabbi, what's he talking about? So talk to the people who have been there. Talk to people who have gone down the wrong path. They'll tell you. They'll tell you that it also started the same way the drinking problem. It started with a little this, a little shamzah. It started with a little purim. It started with a little this. Starts very, very little. Starts very, very innocent. And then that's exactly how addictions grow. That's exactly what L'Sochel Adam is all about. So again, so it's twofold sugya. So it's good to know the lumdus of the sugya. But practically speaking, halach l'maisa, anyone who has even the smallest degree of your shemayim and pashut common sense will realize that these are not activities for B'nai Torah. So hopefully we'll in the schus of learning the sugya properly, and the schus of taking these things to heart, so Kosh Baruch should give us a siyat d'shmaya, that when these kinds of temptations come our way, so we're able to say no. We're able to say, this is not the way we do things. This is not the way B'nai Torah do things. This is not the way Shomer Torah mitzvahs do things. And these are not the way people who want to live wholesome, healthy lives will go about their business. Okay. We'll take just 1 or 2 minutes for questions, and then we'll...
From the perspective of the person's opinion that gambling is gazela, is there a difference between betting with another person versus like with a machine?
The question is, where the machine? The machine is ultimately ultimately another institution, so you're stealing from another institution.
Is it considered gambling if I have something that's considered value to them but not to me and
I don't care about it anyway. I just want to give it to them anyway.
Yeah.
If you want to give a gift to somebody, you can give them a gift. That's nothing wrong with giving a gift.
No, but like it has no, I have no value to it, but they do, and it's the other way around. They have something that I have value, so we can put it in the game.
So why don't you just swap it and everyone's happy?
Well, I think casinos, they have something where like there's a certain amount of number of things and then it gives and then you win. So like those types of machines or
those types of machines, they're all geared to get you to become addicted. That's
so
the whole
those
goal.
Considered gambling though.
those are worse. The play in the casinos is worse. I'll tell you, my sister's right. I should say it off the tape. I'll keep it on the tape anyway. One time I had to be in a place which has casinos. I was not there to go play casinos, trust me, okay? But I happened to have to walk past a place that was casinos. And it was about 11 o'clock at night. There was a person sitting there and wasting every last penny of theirs on the casino. And then I was in the same place about 7 hours later. I went to sleep for a couple of hours. The same person sitting there with more money and more money. It was such reasons, like Mishma, Lahavah, Abdullah, said there. There were people there. I was blown away. There were people there who couldn't walk. There were older people there. They were being wheeled in with their walkers, sitting and wasting every last penny of their money on those Narish guys. Why? Because every couple of times they win. Because it's all rigged that you win every once in a while. That way you stay more and lose more money.
But
so,
Allah,
I don't know. Allah, I can't tell. Okay. You win a little stuffed dog or something? I don't know about that.
Also, is somebody who's getting supported, let's say, by his parents, and he gambles. So is that?
So you're a goslin from your parents if you take it.
No, not with his parents, but with his own money.
His own money. So,
is he considered the yeshiva shalom?
I don't know. Stay away from all these things. Okay, we're gonna have to stop now because the next year starts in 2 minutes. Okay, if anyone wants to speak to me afterwards, we'll be happy to.
What's that one?